This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The Egyptians will learn through a very, very hard experience that you have to have a carrot and a stick, and it seems as though the effort in the Sinai is just the stick.
That's David Deroche, an expert on Middle East security, talking about Egypt's current military effort to crack down on terrorism in the Sinai. Full details coming up. Also, Cyril Ramaphosa gives his first State of the Nation speech as President of South Africa. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Cyril Ramaphosa is giving his first State of the Nation speech as President of South Africa. His speech caps more than a week of tension as his ruling African National Congress worked to get President Jacob Zuma to resign. Our reporter, VOA's Anita Powell in Johannesburg, is standing by to brief us. Hello, Anita.
Hi, Yehias.
I understand the new South African president is giving his first State of the Nation speech as we speak. How's the speech going so far?
Well, so far, this speech has gotten a really great reception from Parliament. There's definitely an aura of hope, of determination, and he's getting a good reception. Previous speeches have been distinguished by walkouts and protests and even fistfights, and this one is going swimmingly so far.
So what are the expectations? What is the average South African going to get away to take away from this first address by Ramaphosa?
Well, I can tell you what the average South African wants to hear from this address, and that is exactly what President Ramaphosa is delivering. He has spent so far most of his speech talking about the economy and how he specifically plans to improve the economy, to lower unemployment, and to create more jobs. And that is what South Africans tuned in to hear.
And I'm just a little curious, Anita. I'm just, what differentiates Zuma from Ramaphosa as far as delivery of the State of the Nation speech?
Well, I think it's very clear that Ramaphosa is a more natural orator than Jacob Zuma was, at least in the English language. This speech is actually not that different in formula from Jacob Zuma's last few State of the Nation addresses. They follow a certain formula. However, it is something about the delivery and about the reception that he's receiving from a respectful, hopeful parliament that makes this one feel so much different.
The former President Jacob Zuma, any word from him in the past few days?
No, and it's notable that Jacob Zuma was supposed to attend this year's State of the Nation address and backed out at the last minute. Nobody exactly knows why, but he is not there tonight. He probably would not get a great reception. At the very least, it might be awkward after his party so publicly turned on him.
Okay. VOA's Anita Powell in Johannesburg. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Sources in Ethiopia's ruling party tell VOA that they expect the country to declare a state of emergency in the wake of the prime minister's surprise resignation this week. However, it's seen as unlikely that Hailemariam Desalegn's departure will trigger substantial political change. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Addressing the nation, Ethiopian Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn said Thursday he will step aside to help the country carry out reforms that would lead to peace and stability. The country has seen waves of anti-government protests since 2014. Human rights groups accuse security forces of abuses, including torture, and as many as 400 killings in response to the unrest. Thousands of people were arrested during the 10-month state of emergency that ended last August. Opposition leader Merera Gudina, who until recently was among those jailed over the demonstrations, told VOA the Prime Minister stepping down doesn't change anything.
there is really no need for collaboration because it is a change within the ruling party. What the ruling party is up to, we are not sure. The prime minister has never been as powerful as the former prime minister. So very little to celebrate because of the change. In fact, the change can be backward. That's what is worrying us. There is a possibility of taking back the country to state of emergency or whatever.
Indeed, ruling party officials tell Vue that the Council of Ministers is expected to declare a 3-month state of emergency, with the military in charge until Parliament, currently in recess, returns and approves Hailemariam's resignation. This month has seen fresh protests, including a strike in the Oromia region, a flashpoint since 2014. Protesters have been demanding political and economic reforms. Observers say the government's heavy-handed tactics have led other groups and regions to join the protest movement, even amid conciliatory moves like the government's recent release of hundreds of people detained under the state of emergency. Gudina says the protesters' demands remain the same.
People are demanding fundamental change, the democratization of the Turkmen state, free and fair elections, creation of independent and democratic institutions. We are behind those demands, but we are worried what the ruling party is up to, we are not sure.
The challenges before Ethiopia's government are real, says Mustafa Ali, a Horn of Africa researcher based in Kenya, who spoke with VOA.
The competition for power between the ruling elites is not addressed. The marginalization and exclusion of key ethnic communities, particularly the Oromo and Amhara, is not going to be addressed and is going to be a very serious challenge in Ethiopia, and it might spill over to other countries.
The outgoing prime minister has boasted how his administration has handled the economy since he took office in 2012. Ethiopia is slated to be Africa's second fastest growing economy in 2018. According to the World Bank, Ethiopia's economy has performed at more than double the regional average over the past decade, growing by 11% per year. The prime minister will remain in office until Parliament confirms his resignation. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
On Friday, February 9th, the Egyptian army launched an escalated military campaign in the North Sinai and areas of the Nile Delta, all of which have seen major terrorist attacks in the past year on both civilians and security personnel. But experts say it will take more than security measures to eradicate terrorism in Egypt. VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi has the story.
The military's comprehensive plan, as stated, will include operations to clear the areas of militants, protect Egyptian society from the threats of terrorism and extremism, and address other crimes affecting security and stability. Alison McManus is director of research at the Washington-based Tahrir Institute for Middle East Policy.
What's been lacking is a longer-term vision that would require not just this brute force, which at times that we've seen has actually exacerbated the problem in that it caused greater antagonism amongst local populations, as well as the destruction of livelihoods.
McManus said military force must be supplemented with economic opportunities and good governance efforts that will make local populations partners in combating terrorism. In late November, President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi declared that he would rely on enhanced measures against the extremists. He called on the military to use whatever force necessary within 3 months, an effort which is now underway. McManus links the timing of the military effort to military and political factors.
One, which would be a very positive thing, is that as opposed to previous campaigns, this time the military is gathering intelligence on the locations of strikes and the locations of terrorist hideouts, training camps, etc. The second, of course, is the upcoming presidential elections at the end of March. As we've seen, a pretty strong propaganda campaign showing the strength of the military in carrying out these operations, sort of drumming up the political support for the campaign, which could be tied to trying to build some excitement and support for Sisi in advance of the elections.
It's too early to determine the success of the campaign against the insurgency that has been developing in Sinai since 2013 or in mitigating a growing threat to Egypt's western desert. But Professor David Darosh of the National Defense University, who previously served in Sinai, argues that it will be next to impossible to fully eradicate the terrorist threat to the desert region.
There has to be some element of force. There are determined fighters here. But what you have in the Sinai is really more of an insurrection. And that requires a significant stabilization, reconstruction, and civilian government effort as well. And unfortunately, I don't think we're seeing that, which is why this insurrection has been harder to eradicate than the Egyptians thought it would be.
The Egyptian military has long operated with heavy force in North Sinai. It has been conducting regular air and land strikes, destroying fields and property in efforts to wipe out hideouts and establishing buffer zones to do exactly what has been announced in this latest effort, clear the area of militants. Professor Darosh insists that security response is necessary, but not sufficient in counterterrorism efforts.
The Egyptians will learn through a very, very hard experience that you have to have a carrot and a stick, and it seems as though the effort in the Sinai is just the stick. And either one of those in isolation almost never succeeds.
Darosh said, an over-reliance on a military solution has antagonized local communities that are critical to intelligence gathering and appears to have led to further radicalization. Local Bedouins in Sinai accuse government forces of indiscriminately bombing their villages as militants hide among the local population. But the Egyptian State Information Service refutes the charges. This week, the agency issued a statement criticizing the Muslim Brotherhood and what it called their terrorist allies and some international media outlets. They are propagating lies and allegations that civilians and their properties in Sinai have been affected by the comprehensive military campaign. The statement added that these allegations are part of a political propaganda war targeting the state and its political system chosen by the Egyptian people. Experts say, despite the efforts of the military, extremists have continued to carry out attacks which now constitute a high level of threat. They say the current campaign depends on the military's ability to secure long-term control over many areas of Sinai. They say that effort is especially difficult given the country's 1,000-kilometer desert border with Libya. For VOA News, Mohammed El-Shinawi, Washington.
A spike in criminal offenses committed by illegal Zimbabwe immigrants has incensed Botswana nationals who want stern action taken. Some immigrants, frustrated by lack of job opportunities in the neighboring country, turn to crime, but locals are increasingly getting agitated. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Martin Ngwenye has the details.
It is still early in the morning, but hundreds of Zimbabweans are already occupying every corner of busy streets in the Botswana capital, Habrone, in search of jobs. The majority are illegal immigrants forced out of their country due to scarce job opportunities. They scramble for every available odd job, from doing laundry to gardening, in return for food or money. But now there is a challenge, as while the number of immigrants who are job hunting skyrockets, opportunities are few. The scarcity of jobs has forced some illegal immigrants to turn to crime. In a recent incident, a 28-year-old university student was found dead in an overgrown bush in Habrone. He had been murdered for his mobile phone. 2 days after the incident, two Zimbabwean suspects were nabbed. And this is not just an isolated case, as illegal Zimbabwean immigrants continue to commit crime in Botswana. Locals are not impressed, as they say enough is enough and want authorities to act. A Habrone resident, Mr. Mpo Mutale, says the crime rate is a cause for concern and therefore necessary steps should be taken, particularly against illegal immigrants.
They are doing a lot of havoc and we think the government should deal with them decisively. It's unfortunate that they come here and commit all crimes, all sorts of crimes that you can think of, including murder. It's high time that they come and take this. We are so much disturbed.
Mr. Buhosi Tlale, who says he was once a victim of some Zimbabweans who took away his mobile phone, also demands a solution to the problem.
It is not fair for these guys to come into another country and start committing
all sorts of crimes, including killings, robbery, you name them, because that ruins the reputation even for the innocent foreigners.
Hundreds of Zimbabweans pour into Botswana every day through unofficial points driven from their homeland by harsh economic conditions. But Zimbabweans Mr. Isaiah Nkomo, a teacher in Gaborone, says the desperate situation back home should not be an excuse for his fellow countrymen and women to commit crime in a foreign land.
It is regrettable to learn about illegal Zimbabweans committing crime in Botswana as a result of economic hardships back in Zimbabwe. Such people are just a minority tarnishing the image of the majority of Zimbabweans, rendering a very good service to the economy of Botswana. Crime does not pay and it is not justifiable at all.
The Botswana police have moved swiftly to fight crime and illegal immigration. An operation to weed out illegal immigrants was launched in December and has persisted since, with foot and horseback patrols intensified. Botswana says it spends around 1 million pula or $100,000 every month to deport thousands of illegal immigrants to Zimbabwe. The challenge Botswana faces, however, is that deported immigrants immediately find their way back into the country. Reporting for VOA's English to Africa service, this is Martin Gwenya in Gaborone, Botswana.
The head of the British charity Oxfam International is asking forgiveness for a reported scandal over sexual misbehavior by staff members in Haiti. Winnie Bianyam, Oxfam's executive director, apologized in a news conference today. She called on any woman who might have been abused by Oxfam employees to come forward so that justice can be done. Bianyam also pledged to create an oversight commission to look at the organization's culture and practices and recommend ways to improve them. The scandal broke last week after British news reports said some Oxfam staff had been involved in sex parties in Haiti. It has focused new attention on international aid groups and peacekeeping units, some of which have been accused of abusing those they care for. One of those implicated in the scandal is the former head of the group's Haiti operations, Roland van Hauwermeiren. He has told Belgian television that he never paid for prostitutes or was part of any abuses. Seven years after the Libyan uprising that toppled the Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi, the country's economy faces several challenges. They include budget deficits, a weak private sector, and high levels of corruption. Oil still dominates the economy, but the sector lacks the investment needed to maintain and improve exports. Jason Pack is the executive director of the U.S.-Libya Business Association. He spoke to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi about the economic challenges facing Libya and what is needed to counter them.
Libya produced its most oil in 1970, 3 million barrels a day. And since that point, they've never reinvested the money to keep the infrastructure to where it needs to be to maintain or even increase production. When Gaddafi was toppled in 2011, 1.6 million barrels a day was the peak. Now we're back to 1.1 after seeing times in 2015 and 2016 where only 300,000 to 400,000 barrels. What Libya needs to get closer to the Gaddafian level of production is investment in the oil sector. It's investment to maintain. Pipelines are degrading. The storage tankers are broken. These things require investment to be maintained, but they need security and a functional government and state to allow that money to be spent wisely and for the top midstream sectors to be brought in. One thing I work on at the U.S.-Libya Business Association is trying to connect those providers of excellent technology, the Halliburtons, Fluors, Bechtels, and Schlumbergers, with the Libyan National Oil Corporation so that a healthy marriage can be made and the money can be generated for the Libyan people to jumpstart other aspects of the economy.
How critical is a renewed international support for Libya's peace and stability to achieve some sort of economic recovery to the war-torn Libya?
From the Libyan angle, it's not clear whether security can come before peace or peace needs to come before their security. So somehow the Libyan body politic needs to agree on who its leaders and its government is so that security institutions can be brought about. And without security, you can't see a regrowth of the economy because foreign investors and people who have capacity need to feel comfortable moving about the country and sending their technical expert to rebuild the pipelines, but also help build schools and roads. So anything that Libya's allies can do, whether it's the international community or regional actors like Egypt, Algeria, Tunisia, that can help bring together Libyan factions and make a roadmap for the future is sorely needed.
How about the U.S. role in Libya?
I'm happy to report that the U.S. is focusing on some of the commercial aspects. And this administration understands that business is needed to achieve peace and stability, and that America wants to do well by doing good. So it does seem that the U.S. administration is trying to help American as well as Western companies do business in Libya, and in so doing, jumpstart the Libyan economy and help create the institutions that are needed to get payment procedures working, to get letters of credit flowing, and hopefully to help the oil sector improve as a wealth generation vehicle for the Libyan people.
That was Jason Pack, the executive director of the U.S.-Libya Business Association. He spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy. Air travelers in Asia. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yahya Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kurt Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.